The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm Dr. Sharon Berquist, a lifestyle medicine, healthy aging, and prevention expert. Each week on this podcast, we have in-depth, behind-the-scenes conversations about lifestyle approaches to health and healing to help you live your happiest, healthiest, and most fulfilling life. Let's get started. We have a very special episode today on gut health with Dr. Will Bulsiewicz. Dr. B is an award-winning gastroenterologist, internationally recognized gut health expert, and the New York Times Publishers Weekly, USA Today, and IndieBound bestselling author of Fiber Fueled and the Fiber Fueled Cookbook. With a passion for plants and helping people, he sits on the scientific advisory board and is the U.S. medical director of Zoe, has authored more than 20 articles published in peer-reviewed scientific journals, has given more than 40 presentations at national meetings, presented to Congress and the USDA, and has taught over 10,000 students how to heal and optimize their gut health. He completed a bachelor's degree from Vanderbilt University, a medical degree from Georgetown University, and a master's in clinical investigation from Northwestern University. Dr. B was the chief medical resident at Northwestern and the chief gastroenterology fellow at the University of North Carolina, and received the highest award given by both his residency and fellowship. He completed an epidemiology fellowship on a grant from the National Institutes of Health at UNC's prestigious Gilling School of Global Public Health. He lives in Charleston, South Carolina, with his wife and children. You'll find him on Instagram at TheGutHealthMD, on Facebook as The Gut Health MD, and at his website, theplantfedgut.com. Well, it's so good to see you again.
It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is the third time we get to talk, and each time is just such a pleasure, and I learned so much. So thank you so much again.
It's really cool. We were talking before we came on the air how it's been spaced out. And so our last episode was in 2020 when my book Fiber Fueled came out, and so much has changed in my life since then. But then our first episode was in 2018, and you know, it's just sort of wild for me to consider how much my life has transformed since 2018, the first time that we got together. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great having you here. And on that note, congratulations to all the exciting things in your life, in your work. If you could just tell us what are the latest things that you've been getting into.
Well, I'm very excited about my new book, which is called The Fiber Fueled Cookbook. It comes out on May 17th. And it's one of these situations, Sharon, where prior to Fiber Fueled, my first book coming out, I felt like there was this really exciting thing that I needed to share with the world, but that no one had heard it yet. And I couldn't wait for that day when like people actually get to pick up this book and hold it in their hands and explore the story that I wanted them to hear. And now here we are, and it's 200,000 copies sold later. And my new book is coming out, and it's called The Fiber Fueled Cookbook. It's the appropriate name. It is a cookbook. There's 125 recipes and beautiful full color photography. But I actually view it as more of a toolkit for gut health. So it is something where Fiber Fueled, my first book, I explained the why, like why you should care about gut health. And this time around, I'm using this book as an opportunity to show you how. So there's a practical approach to food intolerances. There's two protocols for food intolerances. There's the deepest dive into the research of histamine intolerance that has ever been published, as far as I can tell. I teach people how to sprout, how to ferment, how to make sourdough. And so no matter who you are and no matter where you're sort of coming from, if you dive into this book, what you're going to do is you're going to emerge with delicious food that also is going to be enriching your gut microbiome. And that, to me, is one of the ways that we have healthy lives.
And well, I think what you said is just so important about the toolkit, you know, being in this space of lifestyle medicine. The knowledge is really important. I think there's still a lot of work communicating the knowledge to our patients. But then there's this kind of skill set and tool set that people need to go along with the knowledge, right? To kind of not just tell people what they need to do, but how do you do it? So I think you're absolutely right that it's almost a different skill set, right? Taking that knowledge and applying it into a person's life. Is that what you found as you worked into this cookbook and started working on it?
Well, I am a medical doctor. That has been my dream since I was 16 years old. And I never viewed myself as an author. In fact, when they told me that I was a New York Times bestseller, it was the most sort of bizarre reaction that my publishers had ever seen. Because like most people jump with joy and it's like a dream come true. And for me, it was almost a question of like, so who am I? Because this was never my dream. My dream was to be a doctor. And yet I have sort of, you know, accomplished this huge goal for many authors. And so, you know, so nonetheless, I view these books, each book to me is an opportunity to apply my education, my experience, and my creativity to creating resources that can improve people's lives. And I see it as a person comes to their doctor, and we need to move beyond the paternalistic view of medicine, where we write on a prescription pad 2, 3, or 4 things that they do, and then they walk out the door, and we expect as doctors that they're just going to do it. And then we call them like, you know, hey, you're not listening to me if you didn't do what I told you to do.
Yet non-compliant, right?
Right. The non-compliant patient where we never really justified the recommendation that we made in the first place.
Right.
You know, these people, our patients, they are intelligent people. And they deserve to be empowered with the appropriate education and knowledge so that they understand the choices that they're making. And so from my perspective, this is what is lacking in our current form of healthcare that we're delivering, is the opportunity for us to really empower our patients with knowledge. So let me, you know, if you're going to give me the opportunity to write a book, and that book will be disseminated to thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, then let me try to fill in these gaps that exist within healthcare and provide information that actually is reliable, that is evidence-based. My first book had over 600 references, and I can't remember how many references I have in a cookbook, but I'm going to venture so far as to say that this is the most references you will ever find in a cookbook. I think it's 350 or 400 references. And so I am trying to provide evidence-based information that even a medical doctor could learn from, or a medical doctor could hand this to their patient. And it's an extension of the philosophy that that doctor is trying to impart for their patient in this goal to empower them with information.
Yeah. Well, I love the way you think, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think this really is, it's an adjunct, right? It's what you wish you could tell each patient, but you don't have time to in a limited time frame in an office visit. And that's such a beautiful way to frame the book and now the cookbook.
Yeah, no. And so I'm just, you know, I'm just excited to share it with the world and see what they say.
Yeah. I want to dive in on some of the things you mentioned. You mentioned this cookbook also touching on allergies and food sensitivities. You know, as a physician, I get asked questions related to that, as I'm sure you get a lot, and that probably has inspired you to help empower people who fall into that category. But can you first just begin by explaining just differences, right? There are a lot of terms that are used, sometimes interchangeably, and sometimes appropriate, sometimes not, between an allergy and insensitivity and an intolerance. How would you explain the difference between those terms?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I would start by saying this. You're absolutely right. The inspiration for this cookbook does come from direct patient encounters. And in my work as a gastroenterologist, virtually 100% of my patients suffer from food intolerances. Statistically speaking, if you look at the research evidence, they would say 80% of people with irritable bowel syndrome have food intolerances. I would go so far as to say it depends on where you're drawing the line. Because if you have irritable bowel syndrome, you probably have food intolerances. It's just a question of, do you consider them to be a serious problem or not? And in your clinic, Sharon, I would expect about 20 or 25% of your patients in a general medicine practice to have food intolerances. That's a very high number. One in five, one in four people walking through the door. That's a couple people every single day. So this is not a rare condition. And I needed a way to try to help these people. And so this is my approach. Now, when we talk about food intolerances, it's important that we make a distinction between food intolerances and food allergies. They're very different things. And when we use those terms interchangeably, we are making a mistake. Food allergies, to start there, an allergy is a response of our immune system to some sort of stimulus that's coming from outside the body. So we are charging up the immune system and it goes on the attack. And that could be, you know, could be pet dander. It could be pollen, right? So those are causes of seasonal allergies, or those are causes of asthma. Those are two common allergic diseases. But in this case, we're referring to food being the allergy. And the manifestations of a food allergy can come in many different varieties. But what we do know is that at the heart of it, the immune system is responding to the food and going on the attack. So it can manifest with digestive symptoms, gas, bloating, discomfort, cramping, diarrhea, constipation. But the vast majority of the time when it's a food allergy, we're going to see other things beyond the digestive system, not just digestive symptoms in isolation. And so that would include things like skin changes, where you could have a rash, you could have hives. It could include flushing, lightheadedness, rapid heart rate, feeling like you're going to pass out. Or it could include things like swelling, lip swelling, throat swelling. Those are the things that we, as physicians, fear the most, because they can be life-threatening if they're not taken care of very early in the process. The issue with a food allergy is that the response can occur with the smallest amount of food. So if you take a person who, for example, has a dairy allergy, and I put a drop of milk on their tongue, that could be enough to charge up the immune system and create a violent response. One drop of milk. And this is a very important thing that separates a food allergy from a food intolerance. A food intolerance, by definition, and this is an important point when we talk about testing, a food intolerance, by definition, does not involve the immune system. It does not involve the immune system. A food intolerance, generally speaking, is sloppy digestion. Your body is struggling to process and unpack the food. And that could be because you lack the enzymes. For example, we're born with an inadequate amount of enzymes to process and digest that food. The most common is lactose intolerance. Now, lactose intolerance, we were talking about a milk allergy, and you put one drop of milk on a person's tongue, and that will cause symptoms if it's an allergy. If it's a food intolerance, one drop of milk is never going to cause a food intolerance. But there is a threshold. There's a certain amount at which that person who has a lactose intolerance, there is a threshold where once they reach that threshold, they get symptoms. Gas, bloating, diarrhea, cramping, abdominal pain, things of this variety. When it's a food intolerance, it's generally going to be isolated to digestive symptoms. And the threshold, when we call it an intolerance, it's because the amount that the person consumed is less than what we would consider to be a normal portion size. So if we consider an 8-ounce glass of milk to be a normal portion size, well, the problem is 75% of the world can't drink an 8-ounce glass of milk without getting symptoms. So 75% of the world has a lactose intolerance. But what's interesting, so a couple of key points about food intolerances. One is that, first of all, there is a threshold. So there's an amount that you are capable of tolerating. This is not a one-drop phenomenon. Number two, that threshold is a moving target. It could vary from day to day. That can be frustrating. But in a way, that's also empowering. Because what I'm telling you is that number three, most food intolerances can be overcome. The majority of food intolerances can be overcome. And the way that we do that is actually by training up the gut microbiome to help us to process and digest our food. And Sharon, they've done studies with, so lactose intolerance is the most common food intolerance. It's the most well-studied. I personally don't consume lactose, and nor do I advocate for people to consume dairy products. That's up to them, but I don't personally do that. And in fact, if a person comes to my clinic with bloating or diarrhea, literally the very first thing that I will do is take them off of the milk, take them off of the dairy products. So, but with that being said, this is the most well-studied of all the food intolerances. And it's quite fascinating because what we have discovered is that a person who thinks they're incapable of consuming dairy products, if you introduce dairy products slowly over time, they are actually capable of consuming them. And you can enhance the function of your gut and become more capable of processing that food. Further, in lactose intolerance, we also have studies where it's not a matter of actually giving them milk. It's a matter of strengthening the gut, period. Which they've done with fiber supplements. And by giving fiber supplements, people actually became increasingly capable of consuming dairy products. So this is actually a message of empowerment for everyone who's listening here today, that if you have a food intolerance, which by the way is far more common than a food allergy, if you have a food intolerance, you actually are able to improve that food intolerance to enhance the functionality to your gut, of your gut, and to get yourself to a point where you are able to consume that food no longer in moderation, but instead almost without restriction.
Yeah, and Will, you know, as I'm listening to you, I think of all the people in my practice, and also myself included. So I have lactose intolerance, and I've had it my whole life. I think a lot of my patients have some intolerance that they've had ever since they were a little child. And when you have something and you just have worked with it over the years, you don't necessarily consider yourself all the time as being as someone who has an intolerance, as someone who should perhaps work on growing and developing a gut that develops tolerance. You just take it as normal, if you will, because that's all you've ever known. And I have, you know, as you mentioned, probably 20 to 25%, probably maybe more of my patients have a food intolerance, but maybe don't classify themselves as having a food intolerance. What are ways that people can really ask themselves that question and know if they have an intolerance? So lactose, I think, like you said, is one of the more common ones that people are familiar with. And a lot of people start by holding back dairy, but there's a whole gamut of other intolerances. What are ways people can even start to wonder, am I this person? Can my digestive system be improved? Or I've just this week had a patient who said, I've always had bloating after I eat. I thought that was normal.
Right. Yeah, no, totally. And I understand where that patient is coming from. But what if we could make it go away?
Yeah.
Right? And what if we could put you in a position where you could consume these foods that you perhaps have been cautious with or avoiding and consume those foods regularly without restriction and enjoy them? That would be a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. So step one is maybe first realizing that what may be normal, what may be an intolerance, and recognizing that within yourself. Right.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. I think that step one is acknowledging that there may be a food intolerance, not worrying necessarily about what specific food, but instead could there be a food intolerance is the question. And when you are consuming foods at normal levels and having routine symptoms after that, generally digestive symptoms, gas, bloating, abdominal discomfort, cramping pain, diarrhea or constipation. These are the classics. We could throw heartburn in there if we want to, acid reflux symptoms. But if you are consuming food and having these symptoms and it's reproducible, it's occurring with some regularity. I'm not talking about once a year. I'm talking about something that's happening a couple times a month. Then I think that the answer to the question, do you have a food intolerance, is yes. But the diagnosis is not that you have a food intolerance. The next step becomes, what is the root cause of this issue? So now I'll give you a quick example. I can't share specifically what family member this was, because I'm quite sure that this particular family member does not want me to publicly share her story. But I have a family member who her entire life suffered with gas and bloating issues every single day. And so these gas and bloating issues were made worse by food. It's fair to call that a food intolerance, but this person felt like it was all the foods were causing gas and bloating. And I basically said, I think that the issue is constipation. And even though this person was having a bowel movement every day, so from her perspective, she was not constipated, even though she was pooping every day, I still suspected this is probably constipation. And I think that the bowel movements are not complete. So constipation is not how often you go. Constipation is whether you are completely and adequately evacuating your colon. And as a result, you have no symptoms, right? So when you get constipation, it's that you're backing up and it's causing you symptoms. So in these patients, gas and bloating is the most common symptom, and they will find that they are intolerant of many different foods, and they feel like they're intolerant of everything. And it's because it causes gas and bloating. And that's actually because they're constipated. And the solution is not to change their diet, actually. The solution is to get them into a rhythm again. And when they are having good, regular, complete evacuations, the symptoms go away. There is no food intolerance anymore. And so with this particular person, I actually started her on a magnesium supplement before bedtime. And magnesium helps to draw water into the colon and mobilize the bowel movement, keep it running through. And this person did this, noticed a change in her bowel habits, and she has no gas and bloating anymore, none. And this was after suffering for decades.
Just amazing. Well, aren't they lucky to have a family member that happens to be a great gastroenterologist? And well, you know, as I'm listening, I think of all my patients with irritable bowel, constipation predominant. So there's a lot of people who suffer from constipation probably have some irritability. And I think of not just the food component, but I also think about stress and the larger influences really on our digestive system. You need to, I think, sometimes address the whole pie, right?
So true.
Yeah. So how do you approach that?
So this is interesting because we are naturally, like, this was not intended, but we are naturally backing into what is the backbone of my new book, The Fiber Field Cookbook. So I'm just going to come forward and like reveal what I teach in the book, which is an acronym called GROWTH, GROWTH. I'm teaching the growth strategy. And this is my approach that I apply to my own patients who have food intolerances, because these food intolerances, they can be healed if you approach them properly. So each letter is a part of the story, and we work through them sequentially. So let me just kind of give you the lay of the land and then respond directly to what you just said, because I think it's So spot on. So G stands for Genesis. Step one, we have to know what we're treating if we want to know how to treat it properly. How can you possibly treat something if you don't know what you're even treating? Two is R. Let me actually put R-O-W together. Okay, so R-O-W, restrict, observe, work it back in. Here's the point. There is no test. No poop test, no blood test, no saliva test, no hair test. And I don't even know if they come up with something from, like, you know, your tears. That's not going to work either. There is no test to tell you what you should or should not eat or where your food intolerances are. There is one gold standard, tried and true approach. And that is to withdraw the food temporarily, emphasis on temporarily, see how you feel, and then resume the food, bring it back in. And by flipping the light switch off, on, off, on, and paying attention to our symptoms throughout that process, we're able to make inferences about whether or not we have a food intolerance to that particular thing that we are testing. This is how we test to identify our food intolerances. So R-O-W. T stands for train your gut. Your gut is like a muscle. It can be trained. It can be made stronger. You can restore function. But if you don't use it, you lose it. Right? If we don't walk, our legs get weak. Finally, H, speaking to what you just said, Sharon, H stands for holistic healing. As I close out the growth strategy and this approach, I want to remind people that digestion is not simply carbohydrates, proteins, and fats coming into contact with enzymes. This is not biochemistry. You are a whole person. Your other organs affect your digestive system. How you feel affects your digestive system. And when people are unsettled in some way, which many of us are these days, when a person is unsettled in some way, there's actually ways in which that emotional state creates a chronic level of inflammation that has negative effects on the gut microbiome. This is why in an acute setting, many people I'm sure can relate to this, that you get stressed and then you manifest some sort of gut symptom. Could be gas, could be pain, could be diarrhea, could be constipation. Now, some people will get migraine headaches, but about 80% of people, when they're stressed, it's in the gut. And what happens when you make this a chronic issue? What happens when there is something that perhaps is even in your subconscious, some sort of trauma that is unsettled and hasn't been properly addressed, and it's creating a baseline level of injury to the gut microbiome that's occurring 24 hours a day, every day? These, Sharon, are the people who, like, literally, they do everything that I say. They eat all the right food. They sleep, they exercise, they meditate, and then they come in and they say, I'm not better and I don't understand. And what I have discovered in that setting, these are often the people who have gone to see 5, 6, 7 different doctors. What I've discovered in that setting is it's not that you're not eating the right food. It's not that you're not sleeping or exercising. The issue is that there is something that is causing trouble for you. There's something that's bothering you. And perhaps it's something that is in the past that you thought was taken care of, but it's there. Or it could be something that's happening right now. Quick little story. I hope you don't mind. But I just want to share this.
Absolutely.
I had a patient recently. I'm sure you could relate to this. I had a patient recently with ulcerative colitis, and I had been fighting, struggling to get her better for years. And I had her on the right medicine from my perspective. I was pulling out all my tricks, diet, lifestyle, everything. She was not getting better. And then one day recently, she comes into my clinic and she says to me, Dr. B, you're not going to believe it. I am all the way back. I feel like myself again. Like, ulcerative colitis is not ruining my life anymore. And I said to her, it's amazing. But why? Like, what happened? I was doing everything I could to help you. And she said, I was in a job where I hated driving to work every single day. And my boss would demean me publicly and talk down to me and make me feel so small. And I finally got the audacity to leave and took a new job, and they treat me with respect. And that healed her gut and overcame this like vicious chronic inflammatory disease that I was trying to treat with medication and could not get her better.
Well, I love that story because, you know, being in internal medicine, I can see how that plays out so much in my patients. And I think your story is great because people think of stress as macro stress, right? That life-changing event or that traumatic event. And so much that influences health is the micro trauma.
Yeah.
It's those micro stressors that maybe some people think are just a part of life, but they take their toll. And oftentimes, I think more so than some of these objective measures, which really bears out in clinical studies, right? How, you know, our social connections, our emotional well-being have more of an impact than even body mass index, even up to how much we smoke. It's really profound just how that takes a toll in the gut and for overall health. So that's such a great story.
Yeah, and it's so true. And I think what it motivates me to say is that we need to destigmatize these conversations because people are fearful of talking about it. And it's almost as if they're showing weakness by acknowledging that there's something that has unsettled them. I like the word unsettled because I feel like it's very inclusive. And I don't want people to feel that trauma needs to be like literally the loss of a loved one. That there are many different forms of trauma. And if it's something that unsettles you, then that to me is some form of trauma that can be negatively affecting your gut. The other thing is I feel that we need to broaden our comprehension or understanding of disordered eating patterns. Mm-hmm. So there are many people who are fearful of food. Food causes anxiety, and that's not supposed to be that way. Food is supposed to bring you great joy. And when food causes anxiety or fear, then you have a disordered relationship with your food. And this is not to pay any disrespect to the DSM-4 standard diagnoses for disordered eating, such as anorexia nervosa or bulimia. Like, those things are very important, but those are more extreme versions of what is a disordered relationship with our food. And my point is that any disordered relationship with our food or any unsettled emotion can have negative consequences on our gut and be the thing that's holding us back.
Oh, that's fabulous. I completely agree. So growth strategy and thinking about care holistically, I think that final H is such an important part. Well, can you tell us a little bit more about resources for people who want to learn more about this and about how to explore their intolerances?
Well, so I would say, first of all, I don't mean to make my cookbook the first resource, but actually the reason that I wrote the cookbook was because we need resources.
Yeah.
So I, in my own clinic, would see these patients who had these food intolerances, and I knew what they needed. They needed recipes, right? That would make it easy for them. They didn't need me just saying, oh, eat this, not that. That doesn't really actually get the job done. So to that end, I do believe that my cookbook will be a great place for people to start because you don't have to have food intolerances to eat from this book. It's actually for everyone and meant to help people improve their gut health no matter who you are. Even if you're in excellent health, it'll help you. But I do believe that this book will provide the education that people need on this particular topic, including a low FODMAP diet, including a low histamine diet, and also explaining other food intolerances like sucrose intolerance, salicylate intolerance, or there are many people who have intolerances to specific parts of ultra-processed foods. So bringing awareness to those things, empowering patients acknowledging their own personal intelligence about their own body, and then tapping into that to try to find solutions that make them better. Now, going beyond this, Monash University, which is in Australia, is the home for the low FODMAP diet. And they have an excellent course, and they also have an excellent app. And the app is not expensive and can be a great place for people to explore the possibility of FODMAP intolerances. And FODMAP intolerances, by the way, it includes lactose. That's one of the FODMAPs. It also includes people who think that they're gluten intolerant, because that's whole grains. And that includes people who are intolerant of legumes or intolerant of fruit. People are starting to talk more about fructose intolerance. Fructose is a FODMAP. Let's empower ourselves with the proper knowledge so that we don't accidentally start restricting our diet, which actually causes more harm to our microbiome. Let's instead empower ourselves with the knowledge so that we can identify where the source of our problem is and then create solutions to overcome those things.
Yeah, and I'll also add that your Instagram site is such a great source for trustworthy information on gut health. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this information and for all the work you do, really helping provide information that empowers people and helps people live healthier lives. You've certainly influenced so many people and have, you know, made such a difference in so many people, in patients, people, physicians. So thank you for all the work that you do.
It's my pleasure. It's a great privilege to be able to, you know, for example, come on your show and have this conversation. And, you know, for me, this is a very, I feel as my career has matured, I've become increasingly purpose-driven. And that has been a very empowering and beautiful thing. I actually stop worrying about the finances and I focus more on whether or not I'm doing work that helps people. And it's great because then like the other stuff just happens to fall into place. And so I never really do have to worry about that. And in that path, it's really allowing me to accomplish those goals and those dreams that I've had ever since I was a teenager.
Oh, that's so beautiful. You know, it's amazing how the more you give, the more the world comes back and fulfills you. And it's just a beautiful way to just pay it forward.
We, you know, we have these concepts of karma, and we can call that woo-woo if we want to. But I actually think that there's a lot of intelligence into the teachings that have existed for thousands of years.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we are very like-minded on that. But Will, thank you so much for your time. It's always such a pleasure talking with you. And it's just always such a great conversation. So thank you.
Thanks again, Dr. B. And I guess seeing the pattern 2018, 2020, 2022, I'll see you in 24.
You got it.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.